messed up.
I feel like saying more, but I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fantastical edition of the Planet of Terror podcast. I am your host, Cortez the Killer. Tonight, I'm joined by a very special guest, writer, director, Matt Osterman of the independent horror feature Ghost from the Machine, a.k.a. Phasma Ex Machina. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thank you for joining me after many attempts to get together and just what a sizable number of miscues here with technological crap.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't make our lives easier if it wasn't hard or something like that.
So for our listeners who haven't checked out the film yet, tell us a little bit about your film and the story. And
yeah, it's a supernatural thriller, and it's about a young man who, after the death of his parents, is racked by guilt because he was implicit in their death. He builds a machine to try to bring them back, and hopefully, like any good movie, there are unintended consequences and things don't go exactly as planned. So nice happy comedy.
So tell us a little bit about the idea behind the film. How did it kind of come about? How did it kind of come to fruition?
Yeah, I've always been interested in the paranormal. What happens to us after we die is one of life's, more fascinating questions. And I've always loved science and technology as well. So I don't know what happened. A light bulb went off. And I said, what happens if you try to connect these two? If the supernatural does really exist, do they live outside the laws of the universe? Why couldn't they follow the same sets of, universal rules and laws that the rest of us do? So I did a lot of research on trying to connect the two, and figured out I was far from the first person to have this idea. And there's a bunch of, pretty serious researchers out there doing a lot of this kind of stuff right now. To me, it was just kind of fascinating to try to put together, science and the supernatural.
Yeah, so I can tell from the film's website that element was definitely there, that you had done a lot of research and just a fascination with the paranormal. Was there any real life experience that had gone into that? Have you had any experiences with the supernatural in your life?
Man, I'm still waiting. I've had some creepy experiences that, I couldn't say are ghosts or not. I haven't seen the half torso floating apparition type yet. I've had those experiences when the hair stands up on the back of your neck and you think you hear something, you think you see something, but nothing is really there. But I've gone on, real ghost hunts with, researchers and haunted locales and nothing yet. So one of these days.
I always kind of been really fascinated with it myself and kind of been one of those people that, if I haven't seen it, I don't really believe it and yada yada. And it wasn't until one of my really good friends, his wife, one of the most level-headed, normal people you'll ever meet in your entire life, started telling me stories that she had when she was a kid, just growing up and seeing things. And even to this day, she'll see things. And they went out for a wedding anniversary out to Ireland, and they went to like this really haunted castle. And as a tour guide was going through one of the cemeteries, they told about this woman that was in a white gown. And his wife just, our friend just, she pointed out and said, "Oh, you mean that lady over there?" And then everybody in the tour looked over and there was nothing there. And I guess people just kind of flipped out.
Right.
And she's always been this type of person. Every time I talk to her or I see her in person, like she'll tell me some sort of story about how she was just kind of walking around somebody's house and she saw somebody, and it was just like, she just talks about it like she just, like it was a normal thing. And it was just always one of these things that fascinates me. Like I said, like just, you would never question her sanity or, you should probably take something for that.
Right. Yeah. I'm totally jealous of regardless of if they're actually seeing things or they're crazy, because they're living a much more interesting life, because you never know what you're going to see around the corner.
Right. So getting back to the film, so I like how it doesn't really get too bogged down with the science of things. So it's kind of there just to kind of provide a little bit of context. And, you know, you're not really explained a whole lot on how Cody kind of comes to be in this, you know, kind of smart guy, and he's able to, like, put this machine together. And, you know, we see kind of the schematics on the wall in his bedroom and how he's kind of, you know, plotted and, you know, failed and then come back again to rework things. But really, it doesn't get too bogged down with that, but really focuses more on the emotional level with him and just kind of shunning everyone. You know, at the expense of having normal relationships for this end goal that he has. Just kind of talk to me a little bit about that. And was that like just a conscious effort not to get too bogged down in the science and that whole concept, but more focused on the human level?
Yeah, you know, the science stuff is there, and I tried to be as, you know, accurate as possible. And a lot of it goes over a lot of folks' head, but that's okay. You don't have to understand what he's saying. You just have to believe him. So, I tried to just pepper that in there, you know, as little as possible and really focus on the drama and the human interaction. You know, what would you do if somebody came back? Would you flip out? Would you embrace them? Would you run away? Or what if, you know, this was happening to everyone around you, but you were the last one to see something? So, you know, exploring that part of, you know, this experience was really interesting to me, because we've all lost people before. We all have regrets. We've all wanted, you know, people back, you know, whether, you know, it's a parent, a relative, a friend, you know, just one of those things that's part of the human experience. So exploring the emotional aspect of it was interesting to me as a writer.
So to that end, you know, it's kind of both sad and kind of incredible that he remains so dedicated, you know, at the expense of losing all these relationships. And, you know, even with his brother, that he's got every passing turn to kind of, you know, keep him afloat, even though, you know, he's getting in trouble at school. And then, you know, he's got Child Protective Services kind of on his back a little bit. But he keeps kind of trudging along and just kind of is very single-minded in his focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's kind of like this contrasting of kind of both, you know, sad that he's not really able to connect with anybody anymore and just kind of longing for bringing back his mom and dad, but also kind of paired with kind of like this admirable kind of dedication to things. It seems just from that emotional aspect, it seems kind of very personal. Did the film, kind of like the idea behind it, or just kind of like the emotions that went into writing the film, was any of it born out of, like, any real-life experiences that you may have had?
Again, no. You know, I've lost grandparents, of course, but my parents are still around. So thankfully I haven't had to live that experience. But that's one of the best things about writing. You know, it's almost pre-therapy in a lot of ways, because I can put myself in that situation and really explore it. So it's just kind of an exercise, I guess, in playing out different scenarios and you know, putting myself in the shoes of another character where this might be happening.
That's an interesting thought, like how writing can be kind of like this vehicle for almost doing like a relieving yourself of potential emotions that you may have just at the mere thought of losing somebody close like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when I'm writing, and, you know, especially late at night after, you know, a couple of beers or a couple of glasses of wine, you know, and listening to the right kind of music, you can really lose yourself in it, and then you can go through these emotions, and you know, when you're done, you're exhausted because you feel like they were real. You know, thank God they're not, of course,
right.
and they probably don't even touch what the real feeling is like,
mm-hmm.
but be able to at least approach it, I think, is somewhat, you know, therapeutic, and it allows you to understand more about yourself.
Yep, absolutely. So during the film, I couldn't figure out, and maybe if you could shed a little bit of light on this. So when when Cody is finally put his master machine together and it's actually working right and as it should, and people start coming back, most of these spirits are, actually all the spirits are confined to a single location. Why can they not venture outside of a certain locale? Why can they not come out into the real world?
Right. Well, he is able to get these spirits to manifest by, you know, pumping dirty energy back into the grid, essentially. So that's the grid, you know, power lines, essentially, that connect house to house to the power plant. And within each house is a series of electrical wires. So it kind of creates this circuit. So, you know, within this circuit, the ambient energy level is raised, and these spirits can use this ambient energy. So a lot of people, you know, when they describe a ghost, they say it, you know, it was glowing, or it looked like it was some sort of energy. Or even when people describe, you know, seeing a ghost, they do talk about, like, the temperature in the room dropping, or the hair on the back of your neck standing up. So all these things, you know, apply to, you know, and some sort of electrical field. So a house is basically that. If you take a reading inside of your house, you're going to pick up a stronger field than you will on the outside of your house. So that's why the ghosts really hang out inside, because if they go outside, like if they're in the middle of a field, there's going to be no electrical ambient energy that they can use to manifest.
Gotcha. That makes sense now.
There's one exception in the film, but that's meant to be. Maybe we won't say who that is.
So the feeling that I got from the film when I watched it too was just kind of like a bit of maybe like a childlike wonderment kind of feeling. A feeling that I got when, you know, I was watching films growing up as a youth back in the 80s. Kind of a Spielbergian type of flavor to it. Was he at all an influence?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I won't apologize for liking Spielberg. You know, I was a kid of the 80s. A lot of those movies, you know, were huge, you know, inspirations for me. Like Poltergeist, even though, you know, Hooper technically directed it, Spielberg is all over that film.
Right.
That's, you know, it's one of my favorites. And like, even like Ghostbusters, you know, awesome, awesome movie. You know, that's a little bit more fun than I have, but yeah, that sense of wonder and exploration and that kind of stuff is fun for me, and you know, because that's what I get out of the filmmaking process as well.
So to that end, talk to me a little bit about your filmmaking influences.
Gosh, it's really all over the map. I get asked this question a lot, and it depends on the movie I just saw a lot of times. Typically, you know, my heroes, I guess, you know, Kubrick is up there. Certainly Spielberg. Boyle these days is becoming harder and harder to not love everything he does. Gosh. What else? Yeah, it's really kind of eclectic. Really old stuff is fun. Having a brain fart. I just had a 2-hour nap prior to this. I was telling you before, I have an infant at home, so
you're a relatively new daddy, so I'm sure you take sleep as you can get it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is when you wake up, you're still a little foggy. But long story short, you know, it's kind of all over the place. But I like big ideas. And you know, those movies like the Spielbergs or the directors like Spielbergs, you know, I tend to appreciate quite a bit.
Very cool. Well, I mean, for our first feature, you pull it off with great skill and tact. And like I said, like, it could have gotten really bogged down with some of the science behind it, and I'd really appreciate for kind of the restraint there, and just making sure that the real the character kind of really shone through, and and kind of what Cody was going through and what that family was going through. Because, I mean, it was easy to oversee the brother and his situation and kind of him getting ignored, you know, in light of Cody being the main person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just one of those guys that has the blinders on, you know? He thinks he's doing the right thing when, in fact, he's probably doing the exact wrong thing.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit about, so you're kind of a big baller now. So you had the rights to the film purchased by Universal, is that correct?
Yep. It sounds like they want to do a remake.
You got like Fat Cash rolling in right now and...
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, I'm sitting in Malibu right now. My Maserati's idling outside.
Nice. Hookers and blow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. It's, you know, it's not a big money thing. The only reason why we did the deal is A, you know, they put together a really smart team to do it. And B, it means more people are going to see the original.
Absolutely. I was totally joking with you, but what I'm really curious to get your thoughts on is, so, you know, I'm not going to give anything away here, but you know, the ending is your very non-traditional Hollywood type of ending for the film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that getting changed at all?
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure they're going to change a fair amount of the story. I haven't, you know, read script or, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, from my perspective, that ending was the only ending it could have been.
Absolutely.
You know, it wouldn't
work any other way. Just the film was building towards that. And honestly, I thought if it had ended any other way, it would have, I think the lesson learned from the film would not have kind of shown through.
Right. The ending was inevitable, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, whether they choose to, you know, if they choose to focus on the, you know, Cody and James relationship, and, you know, that whole dynamic is still in play, then, you know, I don't know what else they could possibly do. But, you know, then who knows? They might shift it in another direction. And, you know, as a movie watcher, I'm excited to see what they do. And I'm hands off.
Yeah, so I'm kind of curious about that. So I've never interviewed a filmmaker that's had their rights, I guess, purchased for their film. Do you consult with you at all or anything, or is it pretty much a done deal? You're kind of disconnected until, I guess, maybe you're invited to the premiere or something.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's still way early in the process, so
okay.
I'm not officially on, you know, and nor do I really want to be. I don't want to, you know, saying, well, I'd do it this way or I'd do it that way. It's just awkward and... it's not conducive to, you know, a good creative environment. So I'm like, just let them run with it. And I don't want to be the dude making the same movie for 10 years either.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's kind of, you know, your baby and your story has been told, kind of, right?
Yep. I mean, obviously I did mine on a much, much, much lower budget, which, you know, comes with its own pluses and minuses. But, you know, those folks are highly professional. They know what they're doing. So I'm by no means going to get in their way.
Yep. Well, I mean, so to the point, the question I asked earlier, maybe not a whole lot will be changed. I saw the writer, and forgive me, his name escapes me right now, is the same guy that wrote Moon, which is a very unconventional type of film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a very smart film, too, which, you know,
absolutely.
Was encouraging to me. You know, if I... you know, I don't want to rip any on anybody, but if I found out, you know, the guys from Transformers 3 were copyrighted, you know, I'd be a little nervous. Obviously, you know, they're in a machine and they have to, you know, pump out product, and I totally get it. But yeah, Nathan Parker is his name, and yeah, smart writer. So I'm enthused.
Very cool. Well, I'll definitely be keeping tabs on it. So you actually had a pretty good cast. Like, so Matthew Feeney, who plays the role of Tom, the other guy who sees a loved one or somebody that he knows close to him come back as a result of Cody's experimentations, is one of those actors where I see him and I go, I've seen him in other things before.
Mm-hmm.
And he just did a phenomenal job as Tom, kind of, you know, this this kind of recluse is kind of doing his own thing and kind of coming out of his loss and trying to date again. And it was a really great kind of offsetting dynamic to Cody's character. Talk a little bit about his character and kind of really how he made the film.
Yeah, well, yeah. Matthew brought, you know, such an incredible gravitas to the film. Just a, you know, really grounded character, which we needed. You know, it's a fantastical story, so you need some reality. But really, you know, Tom and Cody are just at two different places. You know, they probably share a lot. You know, they're both techno geeks, I guess.
Right.
And incredibly smart, but Tom is just a little further out in the grieving process.
Right.
You know, he's, you know, you never forget, but he's kind of moved on. He started dating again. So he is just more at peace in the way things are going. So when that gets flipped upside down, he's going to react, you know, in the way he does in the film. I'll leave it at that. But, and Cody, whereas, you know, is kind of trapped, you know, and is racked by guilt for what happened. So he, you know, can't progress on until he, you know, pushes through with this. And then ultimately, you know, he does and he has to deal with the consequences. And then we see, you know, kind of his reaction to that.
Yeah.
Did I answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Matthew, you know, is a Minnesota guy here. And he's one of those guys. He loves acting, so he rarely says no, which is both to his credit and to his to our chagrin, I guess, because it's like, dude, you're so good. Like, be selective. He's amazing.
And you know, I was looking at his IMDb profile today, and it looks like he's sporting a hefty beard nowadays. Or I don't know if that was just his profile picture or what.
Yeah, no, he's definitely going for the big, tough biker look right now. No, actually, I think his hair's been growing out for quite a while now, too, and he's going to cut it off here shortly and donate it to Locks of Love, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, super sweet guy.
So I also want to talk about, you know, so it's not just kind of the sense of grief and loss, and there are some really good, genuine scares here. There is a very much a horror element here. The one thing that I appreciated was how they kind of, the scares kind of come about very organically throughout the film. It's not, you know, you're not just cheap funhouse, kind of out of your seat type scares. And the look of the apparitions when they come back, it's not your stereotypical look. Was there that appearance, was that purposeful? In that regard?
Yeah. I mean, well, A, we didn't have a budget for effects. So, you know, doing anything crazy would have just not worked. And, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, the Twilight Zone kind of style, where it's much more psychological than it is, you know, blood and guts.
Right.
So, you know, I like keeping things based in reality as much as possible, and the, you know, the actors that played the, you know, spirits were cast on looks, you know, because we needed them to pull it off without having to, you know, drench them in blood or, you know, any of the other, crazy things. But yeah, we did a few subtle things here and there that we almost, that you couldn't necessarily tell what was going on with them, but it just seemed a little bit off. You know,
and I like too how so when you know we find out that Cody's machine actually works and the film kind of comes towards its climax and we see what's kind of been brought back from the other side within Cody and James' home, this older couple who is definitely not mom and dad. And what I also appreciated about the fact was we're not really kind of told the history behind it. It's kind of alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
But when they pull the sign down from the basement of what, you know, kind of of what kind of business they were running within the home.
Right.
And then the kind of the shame that they felt about what was going on, you kind of two and two together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that played to a great effect as well as a genuine kind of scare as well, or something that was just really shocking and horrifying without really having to come out and say it.
Right. Yeah, you know, I wanted to make them the, you know, worst case scenario for a preteen boy living in a house, you know, mostly alone.
Yep.
Yeah, people are creeped out by them.
Definitely.
Again, the nicest people in the world, like they're fantastic. But I guess it means they're good at what they do.
Something always about like creepy old people in horror movies. Just
Yeah. Poltergeist 2, the I forget his name, the Reverend.
What was his name?
Kane.
Yes.
Right? Kane, yep. I think.
Yep.
Oh, it's a voice. Ooh.
That scared me for years. That guy, and I mean even the medium, what was her name? With the crazy voice.
Yeah, not Tabitha, not gosh. She just passed away a couple years ago.
I know. You know what? I've got my computer pulled up right now. What's her name? Zelda Rubinstein.
Zelda. But what was her name in the film or in the films?
Tangina.
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 Yeah. Here's a completely weird segue, but this is your podcast, so I'm assuming we can do this. But I was at a film festival last week, and there's an actor there by the name of Deep Roy, same stature as Zelda.
Yeah.
But Deep is the only actor to appear in Doctor Who, Star Wars, and Star Trek.
No way.
Yeah, so like sci-fi royalty. You know.
What's his name?
Deep Roy. He's a little person. He's Indian. You would recognize him as the only Oompa Loompa in the last Willy Wonka film.
You mean the one
with space, right?
You mean the one with Johnny Depp?
Yep.
You know what? I actually did not see that one.
Yeah, you don't need to. But they only had one Oompa Loompa that was multiplied. So it was just him playing, you know, hundreds of Oompa Loompas.
Wow.
But yeah, that guy's been in a lot. You would know his face, you know, immediately. But I was at like a table talking, and who played Chekhov in the last Star Wars.
Yep.
Or Star Trek, sorry. We're talking, and it was just like a really surreal moment. I'm totally name dropping here, which I'm not, but
awesome.
But it was just a weird thing that Chekhov was talking to, you know, the Droop McCool from the original Star Wars.
Nice. So talking about film festivals, like where can folks check out the film right now?
Our festival circuit's just about done. The film was released in July. So it's available on iTunes, a lot of DVD rental stores, which amaze me that, you know, they still exist. You get it on Amazon. It's on Netflix, but you can't get it yet. You can reserve it, so hopefully it'll be on there. People could buy DVDs directly from our website. It goes through themachine.com.
And it's still on video on demand right now, right?
Should be. Yeah, I don't know how the window works. I know originally it was a 30-day, but I don't know if it gets extended or how that exactly works. But it definitely was on VOD.
Well, I checked it last week, and it was still on mine. I have AT&T, so any of our listeners that have AT&T U-verse, it's still on there. Gun Machine, definitely check it out. I know it's been floating around the blogosphere now. That's kind of, Greg kind of put that out there, and, we've checked it out amongst our little group, but it also seems like it's getting a little bit more notoriety among some of the bigger sites. What's more or less the reaction been?
It's been amazing, actually, like completely overwhelming. film, and it's low budget, and we kind of wear it on our, you know, sleeve. We're not ashamed by it by any stretch, but it's not a big budget movie. And it's certainly, you know, it's kind of weird to position a film as well, because it's not necessarily a horror film, you know?
Right.
So people that come to it expecting a really scary horror film are probably going to be disappointed, but people that like, you know, hopefully thoughtful, smart movies dig it. And we've had, it's, you know, in terms of critics have loved it. You know, I don't want to, I mean, I can imagine, I love it, so I can identify, but, you know, I think they appreciate the fact that we took a big idea and really, you know, tried to run with it versus, you know, staying small and, you know, doing what a lot of, you know, beginning indie filmmakers do, that we were able a high concept and, you know, somewhat do well with it. So I think they appreciate the eagerness, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, I can say from my perspective, that's what I've kind of gravitated towards, like types of films over the last few years. I mean, not only independent production, because I mean, I can definitely say the independent film community right now, especially within the horror genre, is doing a lot more things outside of the norm, outside like your normal conventions and tropes and whatnot. And really developing things that are much more thought-provoking. It takes a lot more for the viewer to get invested in creating really interesting characters and then also really ideas, great ideas behind that as well. And it's not always about, you know, the gore, guts, and groove, the whole thing. It's about, like, just getting, drilling down to a basic human level. And that could be anything from, like, the disintegration of the family unit to despair and loss and dealing with that. On a very human level, and I think your film kind of runs that whole gamut of emotions and then also combining some genuine horror elements. But that's the thing that kind of that I've really enjoyed the last few years are kind of like the horror type of films that kind of go back to what can be really horrifying on a much more human level rather than these things that are based in the supernatural or otherworldly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The new buzzword is elevated genre. You know, so it's like, it's genre still, but it has like higher aspirations. It's trying to talk about.
Yeah, there was an article I read about the other day. Who had posted it? It was a guy on a horror site. It was a major site. And was it Fangoria? But he came out and wrote this whole diatribe about the word elevated. I mean, I don't know if it explains something well, then I don't have a problem with coining a new phrase. And some people are saying, "Oh my God, it's just
I haven't read that."
It's just another word. It's just another way for pretentious, you know, film fans to like kind of point their nose up and say they're better than everyone, but or you know, no more than the average film goer. But I think it perfectly describes what's going on. I mean, mm-hmm. I think you need types of films like yours. And Greg Holcruz, continue to advance the genre and not just be your standard fare.
Yeah, I don't think elevated means better than, you know, I just think it means it's aiming, you know, for something a little bit bigger in terms of concept.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the way I take it as well. It's something that takes a little bit more, I guess a little bit more action on the part of the viewer to get engaged in and invested in as well.
I agree. And you know, there's so many movies being made these days because so equipment is so cheap. So yeah, filmmakers have to be smart about how, you know, what they put out there and how they position it and to try to build that audience, because we've seen all the, you know, like Greg had the whole crew had the, you know, family in a cabin in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Done a trillion times, you know.
Exactly.
It works for a reason, but he did something a little different with it, you know, which Absolutely. Is what you need to do these days to stand out.
Absolutely. Yep. So in general, are you a genre fan at all?
Yeah, of course. I mean, first and foremost, I'm a movie fan. If it's a great film, like, you know, I'm all over it. But yeah, nothing gets me more excited than, you know, the sci-fi and genre stuff.
What are some of your favorite films?
Some of my favorites, Jason. Yep. Let's see, what about recent stuff? Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I actually really dug.
You know, I was totally against that when I first saw trailers, but I mean, it just, from everything I've heard, it just completely blew every expectation out of the water and then some.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it was a smart film. You know, they didn't treat it like a cartoon. They, you know, the filmmakers really thought hard about the science behind it, which, you know, I'm obviously into that. So I really appreciated that, and they tried to, you know, ground it in as much reality as possible.
Did you win all the science awards when you were in grade school?
Not really. Thing is, I love science, but I hate math, and a lot of
That is totally my gig as well. I loathe math.
I do time on a problem that somebody's already solved. You know, like, I'll just look it up in a book.
Exactly.
You know, like, I trust me, I understand the value in mathematics, and I don't want to knock anybody doing it because it's great stuff. But I get bored by it so easily, and therefore I suck at it, you know? I would have never cut it as an astrophysicist. But, did you see Drive yet?
Yes. I saw your post on Facebook, I think, about a week ago, and I saw it last weekend. One of my good friends was in from San Diego, and like I've said, like, hey man, we got to go check this out, because I've just been dying to see it. I was blown away. I mean, I haven't had a genuine cinematic experience like that in a very long time, where I was just completely enveloped, just completely overtaken with a film, you know, in a mainstream, you know, movie house.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's hard for me to watch. It's hard for me these days to watch a movie and not see, you know, the strings, so to speak, you know, like how it's made and, you know, what they did there. And like, you know, I start thinking about the filmmaking rather than the film.
Right.
The Drive. I don't think I thought about that once. I was just so, you know, from that first song when he's in the car,
yep,
like everything was so pitch perfect.
Yep. It like, it immediately set a mood and a tone.
Yeah.
I think one of the things I was just so kind of ticked off when I left the theater was his father had exclaimed to his son, like, oh, that's so artsy fartsy. And I would just, I almost like wanted to go up to the guy. I'm like, just because there wasn't any, like, you know, there wasn't wall-to-wall action, some explosion every 5 minutes a la Michael Bay or whatever, and just because it had some style and substance to it, doesn't automatically mean it's an artsy-fartsy movie. For me personally, I just thought it was a great character-driven film that just had a really great style to it and substance to it. Not necessarily because it was artsy-fartsy. I mean, I guess when I think of that, I think of more art house experimental type stuff.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, I mean, there were still, like, there's a head that was kicked in. There were boobs. There were guys getting their wrists cut open, you know, multiple gunshots, you know, guy swallowing a bullet. Yeah, I mean, it was intense. I mean, but yeah, that artsy fartsy comment would piss me off too. There's such like this weird, I don't want to get political, but anti-intellectual, anti-elitist thing running through the country right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe that's where that was coming from. But, and audiences, I mean, when we feed audiences, you know, fast food, they're going to want fast food. You know, it's addictive, and that's what they come to expect. So when you take a movie like Drive, that's a little bit outside the, it's, you know, you're going to get that kind of polemic reaction, I think.
I'm still surprised that it got released to, it got a wide release instead of playing like your independent movie houses, like the, I don't know if they have them where you're at, but they're called Angelica Film Centers out here.
No, I've heard of them, but not here.
Yeah, they're pretty incredible. I was just amazed when I walked out. I'm like, wow, this got a really awesome wide release.
Yeah, well, Gosling is a you know, he's not, I don't know if he's a household name, but he's damn well close to that, and he's, you know, he's definitely on the rise. So
yeah,
you know,
between him and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, it seems like they're, both of them are like everywhere nowadays, like in every film you.
Yep.
It's being released lately.
Yeah. Now they get the market cornered.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, have you seen any of Refn's other work, like the Valhalla or?
I have not actually. It was my first introduction to him. Like, I've heard a lot.
Me too.
Bronson is actually on my Netflix instant queue right now, and I want to go check that out. And I heard Valhalla Rising is also a great film.
He's definitely moving up my list. So maybe in a couple of years, when he asks me that question of who are my inspirations, he's probably going to be up there.
Anything else recently that you've seen that you've dug?
I just saw a movie. It's a smaller romantic. Oh, I don't want to say romantic. It's kind of a drama called Like Crazy. It just won Sundance. This was at that festival that I was just telling you about. That played there, and that was Anton Yelchin was the star in it. And, you know, just one of those small relationship-based movies. And I understand not everybody loves those, but it was just done so damn well, and the characters were so well-painted that you couldn't help get pulled in by it, you know?
Yeah.
Going to that well every now and then is, I think, is good for any movie fan. You shouldn't, you know, specifically just watch one kind of film, because, you know, a lot of different colors on the palette.
Absolutely. Yeah, I get burnt out after the screeners I receive sometimes. I'm like, wow, I cannot watch another crappy horror movie again. I've got something else.
Yeah. Well, it could be worse, though.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, so just kind of like from films, like overall, like any classics that your favorites that you come back to time and time again?
Gosh. Well, this is... movie that I've probably watched more than any other movie is The Big Lebowski.
Oh, I love that film.
It's one of those movies, I don't know how many times I've seen it, maybe over 100 probably, but every time I watch it I see something new.
Yep.
You know, like they just layered so many different things in there, and the characters are just so, you know, so oddly awesome, you know, that there's something new I find every single time in that.
Yep.
And Coen Brothers in general, like everything they do, I tend to dig, because they, you know, they have balls. They don't ask permission. They make weird decisions and weird movies, you know.
Right.
But that's cool, you know. I mean, why you know, do what everyone else is doing?
I think they have like a horror movie coming out too, from what I understand. I can't remember the name right now, but.
I remember hearing about it too, but I haven't heard.
That's one of those movies where I just, anytime it's on, I stop what I'm doing and watch it, and kind of the same way, kind of pick up on different things, different like nuances in the way certain characters act in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they purposely, you know, to their credit, leave a lot of dots unconnected.
Right.
You know, so it forces. Like have an amazingly good time, or you know, you can read a, you know, PhD thesis on, you know, the layers of subtext on it, and that makes sense too, you know. So it's like there's all these different levels working on it, and those are the kind of movies that I really, really dig and aspire to.
So any upcoming projects that you'd like to mention or discuss?
Now about the supply and the kind of impending.
I'm sorry, I was losing you a little bit there on the audio.
Oh, no worries. It's another kind of thriller about the collapse of the global food supply and kind of a large global famine. So pretty dark, a bigger set piece kind of film.
So kind of like a apocalyptic type.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like pre-apocalyptic in a way. It's about, you know, society on the brink of collapse, realizing that, you know, industrialized agriculture is now gone. How are we going to feed ourselves? Are we going to, you know, fall into anarchy and chaos? And, you know, are we going to have to start, you know, assembling militias? You know, kind of that whole feel, and then a quest to try to reverse that famine. So it's got a little Children of Men vibe to it too.
Got That's one I've been meaning to check out too. I've never seen.
Oh yeah, you gotta watch it, man. It's one of my favorites. Asked me earlier. It's
awesome. Let's see, I think. Yeah, that's about all I had. I was going to wrap things up here. I just wanted to say I appreciate your time and really best of luck. Continue best of luck with the film itself, and maybe we'll have you on again. I'd love to get your thoughts once Ghost from the Machine. It's a big theatrical treatment.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been fun. I always love talking about movies. So, yeah, anytime.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Matt. And for our listeners, this is our final sign-off. We'll catch you again on the flip side.
A demon should fear me. You're not a demon, are you?
It was licking me!
Are they slow-moving, too?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Oh, no.